From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. And on this week's program, we're discussing the upcoming primary elections from the U.S. Senate and House to the Lexington mayoral and city council primaries. In addition to these high-profile races, countless other names will be on ballots throughout the Commonwealth next Tuesday. I had the opportunity to be out in Corbin and Hazard and Pineville and Barberville the other day, and the signs of a primary are everywhere. State senators, judges, magistrates, other elected officials, jailers. I was amazed at how many jailers races are on the ballot this spring. And we're interested in discussing these races with you. We have pundits with us, actually journalists, who are working the beat and covering the races and the politics across the Commonwealth. And we encourage you to get on board with your questions, your comments, your personal stories. What will be bringing you to the polls on Tuesday? Will you bother to vote? A lot of people don't bother to vote in primary elections. We're interested in hearing from you by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Give us a call, get on the line, and we'll be glad to talk with you at 800-621-8890. Now, here's the plan of action. We have two guests with us right now. We have Sam Youngman and Renee Shaw. First of all, Renee is on the line with us from KET in Lexington. Renee, in 2005, launched the first statewide minority affairs program, Connections, with Renee Shaw. Renee has been with KET since 1997, has extensively covered legislative efforts in the Bluegrass, co-anchored KET's election night coverage. Renee also moderates public issues forums and speaks on issues of diversity, political, and state legislative matters throughout Kentucky. Renee Shaw, are you there?
I am. Hey. Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Likewise, Renee. Thanks so much for being with us. I understand you and Sam Youngman have not interacted or worked together yet.
We have not, so we'll be doing it this way first.
Absolutely. So let me introduce Sam. He's a political reporter with the Lexington Herald Leader. Joined the paper in October of last year, so he's a newcomer to the Commonwealth, or actually not to the Commonwealth because he's a native Kentuckian. Previously, Sam had been a reporter for Reuters and The Hill, where he spent a decade in Washington, D.C., covering news in the nation's capital. In 2012, he trailed Mitt Romney on his campaign trail before returning to the Commonwealth last year. And I understand, Sam, you're glad to be back in the Commonwealth.
Oh, absolutely. Every day. Every day I get down on my knees and kiss the soil.
I'm just very briefly, and by the way, later in the program, we'll have WEKU's Stu Johnson join us as we talk about the Lexington Council and mayoral races. But Sam, talk briefly about your experience as a reporter in Washington, D.C. What has that experience done for you, besides, I hope not made you too much of a cynic?
Well, I'm afraid you're a little bit late there. Yeah, maybe my sense of cynicism is probably a little more overdeveloped than most, but I've been very blessed to have covered the things I've covered. A few years at the White House, last three presidential campaigns, and I've really been fortunate to see the country traveling with some of these politicians. But I will say over and over again, it is great to be home.
Now, you're home to cover this year's election. And let me ask you first, and then I'll ask Renee, what are you watching very closely between now and Tuesday?
Well, one thing I'm looking for is, you know, I think at this point, most of the contours of the race are already set. What we're going to look for now is turnout.
And we're talking, when you say the race, you're talking about the Senate race.
I am. And I'm talking specifically about the Republican primary, where Louisville businessman Matt Bevin is challenging U.S. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. I do believe, like I said, I think the contours of that race are already set. I think, you know, Matt Bevin has really struggled to sort of get his campaign off the ground. I think the question on everybody's minds now, at least on, you know, geeks like me who follow this stuff really closely, is what will Matt Bevin do on Tuesday? What kind of percentages will he turn out? And what does that spell for Mitch McConnell in the fall? You know, anywhere over, I think, 33%. And Mitch McConnell's got real trouble in terms of getting Republicans to turn out for him in November. The other thing I'll be looking for is, how does Matt Bevin handle, if he does lose, how does he handle it? Does he continue to be sort of a firebrand, being very critical of Senator McConnell, or does he do what Trey Grayson did in 2010, which is sort of, you know, accept defeat with grace, and move on, and try to unify the party in hopes of winning in November?
Renee Shaw, are you likewise, and how are you following the races, specifically the Senate race?
Stewart. Well, I'm relying on great pieces by Sam Youngman, to help inform what we're doing here at KAT. And as you know, we've been doing candidate forums on the congressional races and U.S. Senate races. And on Tuesday, of course, we'll have coverage beginning at 8 p.m. Eastern time until 10, covering all of this that's happening. And we're really particularly going to be focused on the state legislative races. But if I can, and I'll get to that in just a moment, pick up where Sam was talking about, seeing what the margin will be on Tuesday in the Republican primary. Like he said, if it's 33%, we've even heard up to 40%. You know, how does that bode for Mitch McConnell as he tries to unify the party? And given the fact that there is a pretty excited Democratic base of folks who are real excited about Alison Lindgren Grimes and the first female, how will that play out, and how tough of a challenge will he have between now and November to maintain his seat? And in addition to looking at that metric, we'll also be really focused on several key state legislative races. In the Kentucky Senate, the state Senate, there are six state Senate races, five with GOP primaries and one with a Democratic Party that we'll be particularly focused on. And most of those are outside the listening audience, John. A couple of them are in western Kentucky, some in central Kentucky. One particular race that we're focused on is in south central Kentucky, and that's the 16th state Senate race that's held by currently Sarah Beth Gregory, who won in a special election in 2012 when then Senator David Williams was making an unsuccessful bid for governor. She won that special election, but she has since been, her district has been redistricted to add three counties in which she did not have to pound the pavement to get voters to vote for her before, Taylor, Adair, and Russell counties. And she's up against a pretty heavy contender in the Republican primary, Max Wise, who is a Campbellsville University professor, a former FBI analyst. He's been able to almost outraise her by a little bit, and according to the latest accounting numbers. And so he's really waging a pretty hefty battle for this incumbent, Sarah Beth Gregory. So that's one race that we're particularly going to watch. And I have a few others that I'll mention as we go along, but there's several. In northern Kentucky, the 24th state Senate race, this was held by the Senate President Pro Tem, Katie Stein, the first Senate President Pro Tem, female, to hold that position, is retiring from that, and it's an open seat with three contenders, Will Schroederer, who is the son of the late Kentucky Supreme Court Justice Will Schroeder, Deb Shelton, who was a former U.S. Army nurse and former minister from Alexandria, and then Brandon Volker, who's 41 years old, whose family has a lot of ties in Campbell County. So that's a race to watch as well. And also in Louisville area, eastern Jefferson County, the 32nd State House seat, Phil Moffitt, if that name sounds familiar to listeners, it's because Phil Moffitt made an unsuccessful bid for Republican nomination for governor back in 2011, and he did fairly well, but he didn't come close to overcoming David Williams and Richie Farmer at that time. But Phil Moffitt is running for the Republican nomination for the 32nd State House seat against Shelley May, who used to be a Jefferson County party chair there. And so that race is also one to watch. So we really, on Tuesday night here at KET with Bill Goodman, Al Cross, veteran journalist who all know, and Jennifer Moore, Kentucky Democratic Party person, and also, I'm forgetting her name, Ellen Williams, excuse me, Republican Party operative and lobbyist, will be joining us to give us analysis on really, really focusing on these key legislative races that will be a lot to watch from now until November.
A lot more than most of us are thinking about. Clearly, you're looking at it from a statewide perspective, Renee. Your coverage, did you say, what time is it, 8 o'clock?
It's 8 o'clock Eastern. It will go until 10. I think we have the option of extending that if we still have some, you know, outcomes that are undetermined at that time. We don't think there will be. We'll think that, you know, the speeches, of course, will come in fairly early, perhaps, and we'll be able to provide coverage of those speeches at Grimes, also Mitch McConnell and Matt Bevin. And we'll have that and air those speeches as we're able to turn those around. So that will be part of our coverage, along with the analysis of these other key state House and Senate races.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. Tuesday is the 2014 primary election day. What will you be going to the polls? What will bring you to the polls on Tuesday? Or why will you not be going to the polls and voting in the primary? 800-621-8890 is our phone number. You can send us an email, to WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Go to the Facebook page and post there, or send us a tweet at WEKUEST. That phone number again, 800-621-8890. We're interested in hearing from our listeners during today's show. In a few moments, we're going to talk with WEKU's Stu Johnson about the Lexington races. But Sam Youngman, Renee, and KET focusing on a lot of the state legislative races, the very, very local races all across the state. Everyone's concerned about the Senate race. Is there any likelihood, any possibility at all that Bevin could claim the Republican nomination and take it away from Mitch McConnell?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, ask President Dewey if we've ever been wrong before. You know, I guess I would say this. When you have low turnout numbers like we expect to have next week, anything can happen. Bevin voters are motivated voters, whether it be for support for him, or more likely is the case from what we've seen from polling, it's opposition to Senator McConnell. You know, you start talking about 10-15% turnout, then it becomes very difficult to forecast what's going to happen, how those voters are going to, you know, how they're, which way they're leaning. That being said, you know, we saw a Marist poll just last week that shows Matt Bevin at 25%. If he's going to make a move, I would have really expected him to do it already. So I think the odds are long in terms of him beating Senator McConnell. But at this point, it's really about, you know, it's really about getting your people to the voting booth.
So you were saying earlier that the issue is really the margin. How much by how much would McConnell claim that nomination? And if there's a large amount of support, 33% or something for Bevin, it would mean problems for McConnell in the November election.
Well, it does. It means that he's got that much work to do. See, for McConnell to beat Alison Grimes in November, he's going to have to get Republicans to go to the ballot box, and he's going to have to turn out all of them. They can't stay home, or she can win with the limited Democratic coalition that exists within the state.
So the danger is the Tea Partiers would stay home.
That's exactly it. Except I don't know that they fit that neatly into categories. When you've been in office as long as Senator McConnell has, you have enemies for all different kinds of reasons. A lot of people I talk to out on the state, they say he's just been there too long. I was with Matt Bevin down in Barberville yesterday, and one of the men he talked to said he didn't like Senator McConnell because of the government shutdown over health care. Well, if that's his sticking point, then maybe Matt Bevin's not the candidate for him.
There are plenty of other people responsible for that as well.
Right. Well, that's exactly the point, is that, you know, Matt Bevin, obviously, when Senator McConnell did make a compromise with Vice President Biden, Bevin said that he'd given up, he'd capitulated. I think right now, but the one thing to keep in mind, no matter what percentage Matt Bevin pulls against Mitch McConnell, McConnell will be the first incumbent to survive a challenge where the challenger spent more than $3 million.
Okay, we're going to take a break. This is Eastern Standard. We're talking the primary election, which is happening Tuesday. 800-621-8890 is our number. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. That phone number again, 800-621-8890. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen. We're talking the primary election, primary 2014, happening Tuesday. Are you interested in it? Do you care about the primary election? 800-621-8890. Why do you care? What would and what will get you to the polls? As a public radio listener, you're probably more informed than your neighbors, or maybe even some of your own family. So what are the issues, and what are your concerns? 800-621-8890. Let's switch gears for a little bit here. We're talking a little bit about the statewide legislative races, as well as the Senate race. But let's focus on Lexington, where an awful lot of our WEKU listeners happen to be. And joining us now is WEKU reporter Stu Johnson, who has been covering the Lexington races. Stu, thanks for being with us this morning. Are you there, Stu?
John, good to be here. I am here.
Okay, excellent.
You got me?
Got a little bit of a delay, so if folks will understand, it's kind of like, the satellite connection or something. Sue, well, let's talk. We've got the three people running for mayor in Lexington. Let's first talk about that whole process. I assume most everyone's familiar with it, but what happens with these three candidates? Why three candidates?
Well, three are who chose to seek this office, but the bottom line here is that the field of three will be narrowed down to two come Tuesday night, and then those two will battle it out for the mayoral position in the fall. The three candidates, and again, people have probably heard these names, but let's certainly run it over real quick. Jim Gray, the incumbent mayor, seeking his second term. He comes from a construction background, family-owned business, Gray Construction, for years and years, some 20 years, Glasgow native. And Mayor Gray, his key, you'd have to certainly say that the point that he has stressed over and over has been job creation and efficiencies in local government. And the high-profile item that most everyone has heard about is Rupp Arena and the project there, the Rupp Arena and Convention Center projects, comes up to around close to $400 million when you include the paying over time for those projects. And Mayor Gray has in essence said it's a job creator and a long-term job creator. In addition to the construction jobs, you've got the businesses that will spin off around it for years and years, and that justifies, I guess you could say, considers the need for some public money to be placed into this project. The city has gone to the state, and in fact, at this point, the state legislature decided not to fund the request from Lexington. It will be brought up again in January, and if conceivably sooner, but probably in January. And so he'll go back, the mayor and the city will go back to the state for money there. But there's some local and state money involved in that project.
Okay, so let's talk about the other candidates, though. Okay, Mayor Gray has been at the center of that issue and that project. What about Anthony Beatty and Danny Mayer? Where do they fit in their role, their concern or their position on a project such as Rupp Arena?
Good point, John. Good point. Chief Beatty is still, because I call him Chief Beatty. He's worked in the police department for 32 years, Anthony Beatty, and he is a former police chief. He works now at the University of Kentucky and has for the past several years. But in terms of Rupp Arena, both Anthony Beatty and Danny Mayer, the third candidate, have stressed that they do not support public money for Rupp Arena. And that is a big factor here, you could say, you know, the difference between these two candidates and the mayor. And for Chief Beatty, his point has been that other towns in investigating this have used, for instance, private investment firms, and that he feels that the use of public money for this project is not appropriate. And that he has also stressed that the point of spreading resources around town, not so much focus on the downtown area in terms of Rupp Arena, but trying to spread the city's resources in other areas of town as well, bringing everyone to the table. It's a common comment that he's made. Let me also talk about Danny Mayer is the third candidate, first-time candidate. A publisher for a number of years of a community newspaper called North of Center. And again, Danny Mayer says no public money for Rupp Arena. He says that the studies have shown, in his opinion, that the sales tax money, for instance, from endeavor like this do not amount to what's projected, and that the city will be on the hook to spend more money over the years in trying to facilitate this project. That's an issue for those two candidates.
Stu, this is a nonpartisan race, so we don't care if these folks have alignments with the Democrat, Republican Party, and the bottom line is of these three candidates, two will go forward to November. Let's talk also, Stu, about the at-large council race in Lexington. Briefly, why don't you lay out what's going on there? We have some incumbents who are part of that slate of 13 candidates.
That's right. We've had the current council members that are running for at-large are Kevin Stinnett and Steve Kay. Both have been on the council for a number of years, and a former council member, Richard Maloney, is also vying to get back on the council. Richard Maloney has spent years on the council, then went to work for the state for several years, came back and worked in the mayor's office, and in Urban County government, and now is attempting to get back on the council. So, and another former council member, Bill Sigelka, who served on the council for, I believe, 6 years, he is making a run to try to get back on the council. And the way this process works, there are 13 candidates from varying positions. As you mentioned, it's not a partisan situation, but varying, I guess you might say, representing various aspects of the community. And that will be whittled down to six come Tuesday night. And then those six will compete for three spots. There are three at-large positions on the council, and those will be decided in November. And I guess a key point here, John, is that the leading vote-getter in the race in November will become the vice mayor. And the vice mayor's position, obviously, is a key one because it represents kind of the leading spokesperson for the council when they're meeting in session. And then that vice mayor, not always the case, but it has certainly in the past been he or she's been in a position to run for mayor.
Well, Sue, and so what you're saying related to the number of votes, the top vote getter, you would expect that the top vote getter in Tuesday's primary will likewise be expected to be a top vote getter, or at least a contender for the vice mayor's slot in November.
Right. I think, John, the key word you just hit on there would be contender. It's not a given, but you know, we'll see how the tallies stack up on Tuesday night. And going to the point that Sam and Renee both have made too, that when you talk about turnout, we're talking about a certain amount of people turning out on Tuesday, and it will of course grow in November. So that could shift things too in terms of, say, I guess you can't read completely into this that the top vote getter Tuesday, you know, is absolutely going to be vice mayor, because lots of things can happen between now and then.
That's WEKU's Stu Johnson, also with us, Sam Youngman of the Lexington Herald Leader.
You know, you mentioned turnout, Stu. I was somewhat chagrined back in December when we had our special election for the state Senate. And when the tallies came in, we discovered that there were three times as many people in Rupp Arena that night watching the Wildcats play as had turned out to vote.
Wow.
So that doesn't give us a whole lot of optimism that the numbers are going to be huge come Tuesday.
Renee Shaw, what do you have to add to this conversation about voter turnout? Got KET. You certainly have your finger on the pulse of folks across the state.
Well, sure, and I think both gentlemen, Sam and Stu, are right on that. That'll be a key indicator that we'll look for that. And I don't think there's been any predictions made as yet from the Secretary of State's office about what they do predict turnout to be. But I just wanted to add too, in addition to the mayoral campaign, there is a contentious legislative seat, and that is the one that was held or is still held until his term ends. Representative Jesse Crenshaw, who most of us know through his signature legislation of House Bill 70, that was the automatic restoration of voting rights for certain nonviolent felons, a constitutional amendment did not pass, and he's tried to do that unsuccessfully for 10 years. Well, he is giving up the seat and giving up that mission, and there are two contenders for that 77th state House seat. George Brown, which is a very familiar name to Lexingtonians. He was a councilman himself. And Michael Haskins, who was on the executive committee for the Democratic Party. It's been an interesting dynamic in that race, in that Jesse Crenshaw is backing Haskins, and so is Jim Newberry, and sitting current Senator Reggie Thomas, who I think just a moment ago Sam was alluding to the special election. He was just elected last fall. Reggie Thomas is also supporting Michael Haskins. George Brown, of course, has been endorsed by the Herald Leader, not unanimously on the board, but so there is a little split, I think, in the African-American community on whom to support, George Brown or Michael Haskins. And whoever wins, this is a winner-take-all, whoever wins on Tuesday will capture that seat because there's no Republican opposition.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. We're talking the primary election. Not a whole lot of people interested in terms of compared to November elections. And one of the issues in this country, we could talk a little bit about that if listeners would like to do so, this issue of turnout and actually considering their vote to be something important. Or is it a civic duty, something that you feel that you're committed to doing, whether it's the tiniest little primary with one little race on the ballot, and that may be the case in many situations. I guess everyone across the state will see the Senate race, the U.S. Senate race, and you'll be able to ask, you'll be asked to choose a D or an R ballot, a Democrat or Republican. Likewise, everyone will be affected by a U.S. House race across the state, or are all the seats open?
Well, they're all open, but at the same time, very few, if any, have any credible primary challengers.
And some have no,
right,
no primary challengers,
right,
whatsoever.
Right.
We're interested in your comments, your questions. If you especially want to focus on the Lexington City Council or mayoral election, we would ask you to do that in the next few minutes, because we're going to let Stu Johnson go in just a few moments. But the phone number, 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. That phone number again, 800-621-8890. You are welcome and invited to get on the line. Now, we do have one email that came in a little while ago, and I assume that we will have some comments from both Sam Youngman or Renee Shaw. This comes from writer John. Will Representative Barr, Andy Barr, seek to make this election about coal again as he did against Chandler? What kind of stance does E. Jensen have on coal in Kentucky, and does she already have money from big coal? So the House race, the 6th District House race.
Yeah, well, I mean, Elizabeth Jensen has sort of taken a page from Secretary Grimes' campaign so far and sort of positioning herself as a pro-coal Democrat. She says, much like Jack Conway says, she's not a global warming denier, but there's got to be some balance. Obviously, Congressman Barr had great success with ads featuring a coal miner late in the race against former Congressman Ben Chandler. I don't know that that's what Congressman Barr will look to do heading into the fall. It wouldn't surprise me if he took a page from Senator McConnell's playbook and sort of tried to frame Elizabeth Jensen as a Democrat who would be a rubber stamp for Barack Obama. And I think that has yet to play out. I think right now what you're seeing from Andy Barr is just an effort to sort of reintroduce himself to voters, remind them that he's doing the constituents, the work of for the constituents, and sort of, you know, just remind people that he's going to be on the ballot again.
And he has no challenge on Tuesday.
Right.
So on the Democratic side, it's Elizabeth Jensen versus Jeff Young.
Right.
And I would just add to that I think Obamacare may be the big wedge issue there as well, that maybe not just coal, but certainly federal health care reform would be the issue that really Andy Barr will try to drive home in particular. And I do believe that Elizabeth Jensen is for the ACA.
Okay.
In fact, she made big national news by coming out and really embracing the health care law. So, and you have to remember that Congressman Barr was among the group of House Republicans who sort of led the charge against the White House in the run-up to the implementation of the exchange. Was a part of the group that voted that ultimately led to the federal government shutdown. So I do think you'll see that. I think Renee is exactly right. Obamacare or the ACA, whichever you want to call it, will be a flashpoint in this election.
And we'll certainly raise that topic, and interested in discussing with our listeners to what extent are Democrats going to be running away from Obama or from the Obamacare during especially in November. 800-621-8890 is our phone number. This is Eastern Standard. And let's go ahead and talk to a caller. We do have another question that John had written in, but let's talk to Robert from Lexington. Robert, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I live in Lexington, and I'll be voting in the primary on Tuesday, especially for our city council and mayoral debate, because I think in my experience that I can actually see some really direct change from those votes. You know, for example, my councilwoman in the 2nd district last year last election in the run-up to the campaign, we emailed with her, and she kind of took our votes for granted and really ignored us. Instead of coming to our neighborhood association meetings, she sent her assistant, who told me and my fiance that our best bet was to just move. So I feel like she's not the person I want representing my district, and I think voting in your local elections, you can really make that change, whereas on the national scale, it's kind of, there's so many more people and parties in play, I think it's much more difficult.
Robert, what's the issue in your neighborhood? What's your concern?
It's kind of a low-income neighborhood. We live at the very end of the Distillery District, and so we're kind of being overlooked in that, and, you know, there's a lot of crime in our neighborhood. There's, you know, when we tried to start our neighborhood association, our house became a target. We had firecrackers thrown at our house and, you know, tires, you know, with convenient little nails right in front of them when we went to go to work in the morning. And we were just completely ignored by our councilwoman and by the police force as well.
So you're going to the poll because of a very local focus. You're concerned about your community and your neighborhood.
Exactly. And, you know, I vote every election, but I think that it's, if you're not going to vote at all or if you're going to pick which one, I think it's much more important to really vote within your community because it's your community and you live there and you're going to see those effects every single day.
Right. Well, Robert, thank you so much for being part of our program. Thanks for doing your civic duty on Tuesday.
I love hearing that. It reminds me of Hunter Thompson used to say, you know, politics is the art of controlling your environment. So I guess Robert got that message.
800-621-8890 is our phone number. Stu Johnson, we have about a minute and a half before we are going to let you go. Any reaction to the comment that we just heard from Robert?
Well, I don't know if I can weigh in on that, John. I will say that the point that he's making, of course, is, and you've heard this a lot over the years, that, you know, local government is the, if you want to put it this way, the closest, you know, government for you in terms you can go down to City Hall, you can raise your voice up there. The council, they set time aside right before the meeting and right after for public comment on items that are on or off the agenda. So there's no question that there's the opportunity to raise concerns about all kinds of things down at City Hall. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sure you get differing opinions as to how issues are handled and how much response they get from time to time on certain matters, because there is a big laundry list of issues that come before the council. But you can certainly make your voice heard, and that is a part of what government's all about, right?
Right, absolutely. Stu, thank you for being with us on this week's Eastern Standard. I will point out to our listeners that Stu has done question and answer segments with the two Democratic contenders for the 6th District House race, as well as the three Lexington mayoral candidates. The final segment of his question and answer segments with Elizabeth Jensen will actually air tomorrow. You'll find all of those on our website at weku.fm. This is 88.9 WEKU and Eastern Standard. We'll be back in a moment, 800-621-8890. This is Eastern Standard on WEKU, the WEKU stations across central and southeastern Kentucky. I'm John Hingsbergen with our guest discussing the May primary occurring this Tuesday, thanks to WEKU's Stu Johnson, who will also be on with us, of course, and we'll be here live on Tuesday evening with the brief updates throughout the evening. Of the races throughout our region and across the state and the Commonwealth of Kentucky. With us in the studio this morning on this Thursday, Sam Youngman of the Lexington Herald Leader, Renee Shaw of KET, Kentucky Educational Television. Renee and Sam, let me just follow up with the one more question that John had written by email earlier. He had written, tell us more about Chris Harris, who is running against W. Keith Hall in the Democratic 93rd District for the KY House. This sounds like something that Renee may be knowledgeable about. Who is the coal industry backing in this race, the 93rd District for the Kentucky House? Renee, you know about that race?
Yes, Chris Harris is the Pike County Magistrate who is running against the incumbent who is seeking his eighth term, Keith Hall, who has been in the paper in the recent years for either sanctions on ethics violations, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's what this race has become about. I think Mr. Harris has accused Representative Hall of being dishonest and that people deserve to have an official representing them in Pike County who is not corrupt. So it's become that kind of fight. Coal is very important, of course, in that area. Keith Hall is chair of a committee that oversees a lot of the coal operations and even kind of has a conflict with perhaps some of the companies that he even owns, but he's still chair of those committees. He's been there, like I said, for seven terms. So this race is really interesting. And also, believe it or not, Mr. Harris is trying to connect Mr. Hall to President Obama. And is doing that in ads and saying that he is very similar in position, et cetera, which is not really a truth at all. So Harris is 42 years old. Like I said, he is a magistrate there. And Keith Hall has been able to, you know, sustain his position and keep his chairmanship despite all of his ethical challenges, and has gotten a lot of backing from groups who believe that he is the best one to continue doing what he's doing. Because many people say that in Pike County, the folks want somebody, even though they may have a checkered record, they want somebody who can get something done. And Keith Hall has proven that he is a voice for those people, at least convince them that he is a voice for those people in Pike County that he represents. And it's yet to be seen. I think it's a close race, and we'll see on Tuesday night whether or not he's able to sustain his position.
Thank you, John, for writing to us to this week's Eastern Standard, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. We're talking the Tuesday primary, the May 2014 primary across the Commonwealth, 800-621-8890. If you don't have a comment about the specific candidates, why are you voting or why are you not voting? Anyone listening who is not voting on Tuesday, and why? Why would that be the case? 800-621-8890. Renee Shaw and Sam Youngman are here with us. Here's a note, actually a caller. Chip from Lexington did not want to go on the air, but he wanted to make sure that it was clarified that as an independent, he'll be eligible to vote for the mayoral and council at large primaries in Lexington. Is that the case, Renee? How does that work?
Well, and I'm going to defer to Sam, but yes, I do believe because it is a nonpartisan, he can vote in that race.
You can claim it. You can take a nonpartisan ballot. Is that the way that works?
No, he'd be closed out from voting. He'd be closed out from voting for Congress, for the Senate, or any of those, because we do have closed primaries here in Kentucky. Democrats vote in Democratic primary, Republicans vote in Republican primary. But yeah, for that mayoral race, I don't imagine he'd have any issues. But I'm remiss in that I'm not better versed on that.
Here's a note by email. I vote every election. This emailer did not actually give a name, but says, I vote every election. This year is very important to me as I am very upset over the cuts to education while we try to build a new arena. Sure, we can play basketball, but we can't teach children to read. That's a concern about the Rupp Arena project in Lexington.
And that's one of the issues, I think, that's brought up in those debates that Anthony Beatty and Jim Gray and Danny Mayer have had. And as you've seen in the ads of Anthony Beatty, both radio and television, he's really hitting that, you know, to the detriment of neighborhoods and education, there's the funding for Rupp Arena. And it's interesting how that may or may not resonate, as Rupp Arena is considered to be a big economic driver in Lexington, Fayette, and in central Kentucky. So I think that will be a real pivotal issue in that race.
800-621-8890. Get on board. Let us know what is on your mind related to this this May primary, and you know, what brings you to the polls, what causes you to come out and vote, especially in a primary when voter turnout is traditionally, historically very low. 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. The Senate race, let's return to that. That affects everyone in our listening area. Just by way of summary, we have Mitch McConnell being challenged by Matt Bevin. And Bevin is a Tea Party, a member of the Tea Party. To what extent, Renee Shaw and Sam Youngman, is the Tea Party, well, I guess it is fairly effective in Kentucky because of the other senator in the state is really very much aligned with the Tea Party, Rand Paul. Is it a possibility, or to what extent are the Tea Partiers that influential that they're going to really influence this race?
Well, I think it depends on where you go in the state. I mean, I think they continue to have a large presence in northern Kentucky, parts of western Kentucky like Davis County, where I'm from. That being said, I do think you're seeing Kentucky sort of mirror the national trends, and that the Tea Party, the power of the Tea Party, I think really peaked in 2010 and has sort of ebbed since then. You know, Matt Bevin has struggled to really claim that Tea Party mantle, going on MSNBC not long after he announced and saying, you know, MSNBC hardly the station of choice for the Tea Party. He goes on there and says, I'm not a member of the Tea Party. Well, that makes it difficult to collect some of those voter endorsements. That being said, some of the outside groups that are traditionally aligned with the Tea Party members, like the Senate Conservatives Fund or the Madison Project, that had success in electing Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, Mike Lee in Utah. So I think, you know, some of those outside groups have gone all in with Matt Bevin, and I don't think they're seeing quite the return on their investment that they'd like to. It sort of reminds me of in 2004, MoveOn.org had sort of reached, I think, its pinnacle of power, and then sort of that purity test was pushed aside as you move towards the 2006 midterms when Democrats said, hey, purity is good, but we'd rather win. And I think Republicans are nearing that point.
And I think, too, perhaps you can measure some strength of the Tea Party in a particular district, and that's the 32nd state House seat where Tea Partier Phil Moffitt is running against, and she would say that she's not the establishment candidate, Shelley May, who used to run the Jefferson County Party. But you'll be able to see, I think, judging, too, in that area, as Sam was saying, that it's maybe more localized in certain places, if that Tea Party moniker will give Phil Moffitt an edge, or if there'll be other factors that cause his defeat or his success in that primary.
And actually, Renee, you bring up a very good point by referring to the Tea Party moniker. I mean, to what extent is the Tea Party even eligible for consideration as a party? I mean, they're not really a party, right? Are they an organized structure? Is there a leadership at the top someplace? And do they have a funding structure in place?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things we struggle with in booking Tea Party guests is exactly what you're getting at, that there's no state Tea Party leader. And as Sam was saying, you have very concentrated pockets of influence of the Tea Party, northern Kentucky, western Kentucky, maybe some in south central Kentucky. But there's no organized titular head of, there's no, you know, Kentucky Tea Party in a sense. And so I think maybe that makes it much more difficult for them to get the kind of footing they need to have success in these primaries.
Yeah, I think, you know, as a group, they've become somewhat fragmented. It's they're almost victims of their own success after the 2010 elections. You'll remember that President Obama referred to that election as a shellacking. Mm-hmm. You know, since then, I think they, like any party that enjoys even a modicum of success, they've sort of had to define, well, who are we and what do we stand for? And I know for analysts, for pundits, it's always been very difficult to sort of figure out what box Tea Party members fall into. What are the issues that drive them? I think you've seen as a result in subsequent years, they've become sort of fractured over what is the driving force behind them. I think that's one of the reasons Matt Bevin struggled to sort of get his campaign off the ground, because I don't think you'd find many people who see a lot of room on Mitch McConnell's right from which to run.
This is Eastern Standard. We still have some time for you to get involved in the conversation. Why are you voting on Tuesday, or why not? How about the Tea Party? What is your personal affiliation? Anybody out there who aligns with the Tea Party or has some concerns about movements such as the Tea Party? 800-621-8890. Send us an email if you do so quickly at wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. But that phone number again, 800-621-8890. Now, we're talking from the perspective of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, but we talk about Obama getting a shellacking in 2010. Your perspective, Renee Shaw and Sam Youngman, what do you think about the possibility of Obama getting another shellacking?
Well, I mean, traditionally, this is a bad election for a sitting president. The third election in a second term of the president, the minority party traditionally does very, very well. What we're looking at, the forecast we're looking at now makes it look like 2014 will be no exception to that. Republicans are very bullish about their chances of retaking the United States Senate. You can expect that to be a big part of Mitch McConnell's pitch to voters going into the fall, that if they elect him, he stands a very strong chance of becoming Senate Majority Leader. I'll defer to Renee at that point, but I do think that, you know, what you're going to see going forward is that McConnell's going to push this idea that Republicans are on the march, and I do think that they're at least positioned right now for a very good 2014.
And I would say just to take it to a state legislative level as well, you know, the House Republicans feel like they're in as good a position as they've been in 90 years to reclaim the majority in the state House. You know, currently there are 54 Democrats and 46 Republicans, and they feel like they have some good candidates in this year's field who can, you know, help them get that edge. And even if they even come close to in striking distance of, you know, 2 to 3 seats, that maybe perhaps there might be some defections of the other party. Now, that was a speculation of the last election cycle, and we'll see if that still continues to hold. But they feel that they are at the right side of the issues. I know minimum wage probably will be a big issue that will be played out on the state legislative level and perhaps even in the federal races. I think Elizabeth Jensen will bring that to the fore in her battle against, if she wins the primary, with Andy Barr in the 6th Congressional District. I think you'll see a lot of those pocketbook-type issues really come to the forefront, and it would be interesting to see how Democrats can, in Kentucky, particularly running in state legislative races or even on congressional level, can flip the script on the theme of Obamacare and say, well, in Kentucky, which we just had this poll earlier this week that showed that when you call Obamacare Connect, which is the state health care exchange name, there is more favorability toward that program. So it would be interesting to see if Democrats embrace that in some way and say, you know, we've got 420,000 folks who have signed up for the ACA here in Kentucky. And so it would be interesting to see if they actually use that to their benefit and not run away from it, as many of us predict they will.
And I think you really hit on the question that's going to be on at the forefront of our minds come October. Are voters going to the voting booth on Connect, or are they going on Obamacare? And it really is a matter of definitions.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Let's go back to the phone and talk to Carrie from Nicholasville. Carrie, thank you for being part of our program. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I was curious as to who's running the smear ads in the Jessamyn County judge executive race.
Renee, are you familiar with that?
I'm not familiar with that race. I'm sorry, I cannot comment.
I haven't seen them either. I hate to miss a good smear ad, though. So
I do too.
What are you seeing, Carrie?
What can you tell us about it?
Yeah, please.
Well, they just started this morning, you know, right at the end, and they don't appear to be attributed to anybody. They're, I guess they're trying to smear Bob Dameron over some legislative pension changes that were made years ago.
Right, and then there was a report that came out that he would benefit if he were to get the judge executiveship, as it would be called, that his pension would be bloated significantly. So I'm sure that will be a big key point, a big flashpoint that his opponent will use against him.
But it doesn't appear to be attributed to the other candidate.
Or PAC, no one has mentioned this is being brought to you by. I'll have to look for that ad. In fact, I'll Google that. I missed that this morning.
And on the local races and the regional statewide races and so forth, are there any laws that require attribution for advertising like that? Apparently, Sam's not familiar with any. Renee?
Yeah. I'm not sure, and I'd have to do some homework about that. I'm not sure that there is. I mean, most of the time you do see in very tiny print in the font
paid
on
for
the
by.
Screen.
Paid for by.
Yeah, it's paid for by, sponsored by. So usually that information is somewhere embedded in the video of that program. It doesn't have to be audibly announced, of course. I'm not sure if that's a rule or just what folks comply by doing.
And, of
doing.
Course, race is governed by the FEC. The candidate has to actually say my name, and I approve this.
Yeah,
message,
I approve
on the federal
message,
level.
Yeah.
All right, we have a few minutes remaining. We're talking primary 2014 on Eastern Standard. Renee Shaw, Sam Youngman are with us. From each of you, what do we want to look for on Tuesday night? Renee, what will you be look? I mean, of course, you're looking statewide at a lot of races, but what will be telling us something about November or even about 2016 when we look to the results on Tuesday?
Well, I think I'm going to wedge a little gender discussion in here. I think one of the things I'll be looking for is to see how many women come out of these primaries, and we have a lot of women who are on the ballot either in the primary or not facing a challenge in a primary that will go on and face some in November. So I think I'm really interested in seeing what the gender total would be in some of these races. And, of course, you know, the state legislature, it would be interesting to see if you have any incumbents. You have a couple of very vulnerable incumbents in the state House and the state Senate. As I mentioned earlier, it would be interesting to see if they survive their primary challenges and advance to the November contest. And so that's what we'll be looking for, as well as we'll have our eye on the Matt Bevin, Mitch McConnell race. But our primary focus will be, because we feel every other media outlet is going to cover the U.S. Senate race, and we really feel that our strong suit can be really giving a lot of attention to these state legislative races and, of course, the mayoral race here in Lexington.
And Matt Bevin. I'm calling Sam Youngman, Matt Bevin.
He would not be happy about that.
Maybe not you either.
Well, I go back to that. I'll be looking at the percentages, what percentage of the vote Matt Bevin's actually able to garner. But more than that, I'll be looking to the election night speeches. What's Matt Bevin's speech? What does he say if he loses? How does he concede the election? Does he do so in a way that allows some hope that he'll help unify Republicans? And then you look at what Mitch McConnell will say. Will he deliver a message that invites some of those disaffected, disillusioned Republicans to come back into the fold? He's going to have quite a sales job ahead of him, and it starts Tuesday night.
So it's not necessarily the horse race. It's about some of the details and how these things are executed and the messages that are embedded in the results.
No, I think so. I mean, look, it's going to be a nasty race come the fall. Mitch McConnell needs as many Republicans on his team as he can get. And if he's able to win this election, then Tuesday night he's going to have to start, mending some of these broken fences.
Sam Youngman of the Lexington Herald Leader will be looking for your coverage, especially on Wednesday morning, but also you'll have coverage online, I'm sure, at Kentucky.com.
Absolutely.
And Renee Shaw, KET's statewide coverage. You said you're on the air at 8 o'clock Tuesday
8 o'clock
night.
Eastern time until 10, and we have the option of going a little later if necessary, so I hope people will tune in.
Okay, and radio listeners, if you're listening to the classical music or perhaps even the world from Public Radio International, we'll have some updates here on WEKU. The smart voter would be following all three. So, thank you, Renee Shaw. Thank you, Sam Youngman,
thank
for being
you.
Part of this week's show.
Thanks for having me.
Eastern Standard is a production of WEKU at Eastern Kentucky University. Our associate producers are Richard Turner, Logan Riley, and Andrew Moorhead. Richard Turner produced this week's program. Our technical director is normally Jonice Franklin. We had Richard on the phones today with some assistance from Sean McCormick. A reminder, this program will be available online later today as for downloading and for listening online. This is Eastern Standard. I'm John Hingsbergen. Thanks for joining us on WEKU.